Let's get back to the Cyber Advisor on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's David Revell.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. I'm Dave Revell, and if you'd like to join us, our phone number is 888-463-6748, or you can email me. It's dave@thecyberadvisor.com. Well, just apropos of what we were just talking about, for all of those small business people down in Florida, they just found out that they may see their unemployment insurance rate increase by about 12 times. The Florida Department of Revenue's Robert Babin said Florida pays its unemployed benefits through its Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund, and that trust fund, because of high unemployment rates recently, has been depleted. Therefore, they have decided to raise the rate, and the rate is going to go from a minimum tax rate per employee of $8 per year, I think it is, to $100 per year, from $8 to $100 per whatever the period is for unemployment rate. That is a shockingly high tax rate, in my opinion. Well, earlier in the show, we were talking about gold, and gold has made a new record this week and has stayed above the old record. And as you probably know, one of our favorite investment vehicles are ETFs. Those are those exchange-traded funds that are characterized by low management fees and a good ability to track whatever the index or the underlying benchmark is for them. The largest fund out there now is the GLD Gold EFT. It got started back in 2004 with $114 million in assets. 5 years later, right now, this EFT has ballooned to $41.1 billion in assets and it commands a total of 1,113 tons of bullion. If GLD were a central bank, it would be the fifth largest central bank gold holder, ranking just below France and China. GLD was launched by the World Gold Council, a group that represents gold mining companies, at a time when gold prices were struggling and excessive supplies were weak, especially for jewelry demand and so on. But as you can see, from $114 million to $41 billion in about 5 years or so. Well, one of the most interesting things, if you have the time to look at, are company conference calls, and they can give you real insight into exactly what's happening out there. I would recommend Yahoo Finance as a great way to come up with that. We had a good perspective from the CEO of Saks Fifth Avenue, where he said during his conference call that he's starting now to feel a little pinch, and he's starting to see revenues even among the very well-to-do. He's starting to see their perspective tighten. And he said, quote, "This recession has been a shock to the system of the luxury consumer, somebody who's at the high end, who took a 50% hit in their net worth, even though it's up substantially again this year. That individual is still a little bit shell-shocked and still watching their expenditures very close." If you wanted to find one key to Wall Street right now, it is the consumer, how the consumer reacts. So any insight that you can get like that is an excellent one. And that's from Saks Fifth Avenue. Go to Yahoo Finance, and you can get the earnings conference calls each week. Well, this week was also the week that President Obama visited China, and I thought it a good opportunity to listen to one of the real experts on the world economy and specifically on Asia, and that's Stephen Roach, who's the vice chairman of Morgan Stanley. And Stephen here gives his perspective on some of the issues with China. As you probably know, going into that meeting, the number one issue, no doubt, was the floating of the Chinese currency, the yuan. Without floating, the Chinese have a real significant competitive advantage in world markets, and a lot of economists feel this is the number one reason China has been able to build up such a great, tremendous trade deficit with the U.S. Here's Stephen Roach answering whether or not China should float the yuan.
No, Mandy, this is not the answer for China and the world. It's a political ploy to try to come up with some sort of a a makeshift quick fix. But these imbalances, I think, really reflect huge structural issues in the major economies of the world. I mean, the U.S. is taking the excess consumption model to extremes, basically by borrowing against an asset bubble. And the Chinese have done their share of creating imbalances by focusing too much of their growth on investment and exports. And we both major economies need to rethink, and actually I'm much more optimistic that the Chinese are about to make a major push in stimulating internal private consumption than I am that America is finally getting off the consumption bandwagon. And, you know, I think the Chinese ultimately are pragmatic. They're focused on social stability. They don't want a replay of last year's slowdown with high unemployment, and they'll do what it takes to keep the system growing and absorbing surplus labor. It's going to be tougher for the U.S. to get off this unbalanced model, and it's very counterproductive to put this all on the Chinese currency as the linchpin of this important change for the world.
Well, I don't really agree with Stephen Roach here. I do think that the value of the yuan is artificially depressed, and that this is one of the major problems. But the major problem I think he does an excellent job identifying, and that is the U.S.'s constant push to increase the consumption model, and China's push to increase the production model. I think you will find he's exactly right here, that China is probably going to have an easier time adjusting than we are. It is that constant drumbeat of trying to get more and more consumption out of the U.S. Consumer, to the point at which the U.S. consumer accepted a huge debt load, which put us in this precarious position. Well, taking this then one step farther, Stephen Roach has asked whether or not he believes the yuan can become the reserve currency of the world, and here's what he had to say there.
I think we're a long ways away from that, Mandy. I think the Chinese have always said, and I believe them, that they are committed to convertible currency. I think probably a realistic target for that would be the year 2020, which is that point in time when the Chinese government is really wants to make Shanghai a world financial center. You can't be a world financial center without a convertible currency. Between now and then, I think we'll see gradual opening of the capital account and relaxation of some of the controls on the currency. But this is a process. This is not a step function that that moves sharply, because, again, that would jeopardize the stability of what is still a relatively embryonic financial system, and China will do everything in its power to avoid that.
Interesting point, one I hadn't really thought of too much before, but that is, until the yuan becomes a convertible currency, it's convertible into other currencies, and it clearly cannot become the reserve currency. And he's absolutely exactly right about that. I hadn't really thought about that before. But having said that, China remains an enigma, because the process, the decision-making process, the economic decision-making process for China is not free and open. And so any dates or any projections there have to be with that understood. Well, it's always one of my favorite times of the year to come into the fall like we are right now. You've got the colors up here in the Northeast, which are absolutely beautiful. But one of the other things you have each year as kind of a celebration is the new Beaujolais Nouveau that comes out from France every year at this time. Now, Bill Deutsch is the founder and president of W.J. Deutsch, and you'll probably see him on all the wine bottles as you go into the wine store. He's the largest French wine marketer, and he talks about his largest account, the most popular French wine in America, which is George Dubuff. And Dubuff makes a wonderful wine, but especially a wonderful Beaujolais Nouveau that is out right now, and it has always those colorful labels and is always the perfect wine going into Thanksgiving. Here's Bill Deutsch talking about this particular Beaujolais and talking about George Dubuff himself.
The vintage is an excellent one. Mr. Dubuff told me in a recent phone call that, in his opinion, it's the best vintage in 50 years.
the best vintage in 50 years, absolute music to our ears. He goes on to describe the Beaujolais as it comes out in this clip.
Mr. DeBuff has spent his whole lifetime creating the best wines of the Beaujolais, and he's been very successful at it. We've had an opportunity to work together. We've represented him for 28 years, and it is thrilling that this year's Nouveau is such a good one, because good wine comes at a good time.
I wanted you to hear that. Good wine comes at a good time. Sometimes when the economy is bad and times aren't going so well, a nice bottle of wine can really help make your evening. I recommend the Beaujolais Nouveau. It's an inexpensive wine. It's a nice, crisp wine, best cooled, best served, slightly chilled. So please consider a nice glass of Beaujolais for this Thanksgiving dinner. Well, it's time to look at the economic calendar and how we did this week. Economic calendar, lots to report. It was a very, very busy week. The week began with some positive economic news. Retail sales were up 1.4% versus an estimated 0.7%, so they were double that. But if you take away autos and the lingering effect of that cash for clunkers program that we're still seeing in some of these numbers that are coming through right now, you saw that retail sales up just 0.2%, anticipated up about 0.1%. Business inventories continue to decline, and as we've said before, I really do believe that this marks one of the real highlights of American business management, their ability to whittle down on inventory at a time when sales are just absolutely plunging. So inventories down 0.4%. That was over an expectation of 1%. Not a positive thing to see inventories going down, not positive for the economy, but it says a lot about management's drive to get costs under control. The core producer price index, now this raised lots of eyebrows when it came out and was the thing that Gary Schilling was talking about earlier. Core producer price index, this is a business, these are the business costs, not consumer, but producer price, was expected to rise 0.2%. So if there was any inflation, everyone knew it was benign. But in fact, it declined 0.6%. Really kind of a shocking number, one that indicates that at least at the producer price level, we're seeing absolute deflation at this point. Capacity utilization continues to languish on the downside, a minor tick up, but still at only 70.7%, not a very good, particularly good number. The big number of the week, the headline number, the number that seemed to really shock the market and turn it around was housing starts. The expectation was for housing starts to be up about 600,000, and they came in at only a rise of 529,000. Now, that came out before Wednesday morning's market. It was announced at 9 o'clock. The market opens at 9:30. It was announced at 9 o'clock, and you could see the all the futures on the market turn around and head to the negative, and indeed what seemed to going to be a positive day turned into a mildly negative day, followed by a bigger negative day the day after. Building permits were also down. They were only 552,000 versus an expected 580,000. Initial claims for unemployment were just about flat from expectations, but still not a number that you ever want to see. You never want to see initial claims above 500,000, yet we still continue to be there. Initial claims for unemployment at 505,000. Leading indicators, slightly on the positive side. That was a good number. It was announced yesterday morning that the leading indicators were up 0.3%, indicating that if there is a recovery in the economy, and this becomes the really big issue of the day, if there is a follow through to the stimulus, if there is a rebound in the economy, it looks awfully pale, awfully anemic. Now, that may not necessarily mean that we're going to go double dip, but nonetheless, it is a very anemic recovery if your leading indicators are up just 3 ticks, just 0.3%. Well, next week, we'll have existing home sales. We'll have a preliminary number for GDP. We'll have consumer confidence, personal income, durable goods orders, and new home sales coming out. So another very big week as this fall kind of rolls around. Well, we won't be here next Friday, everyone. I hope you all have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving. Our thanks to Dave Olson, our producer at TalkZone, and all the people behind the scenes. And we wish you, as we say, a wonderful Thanksgiving. We'll see you in 2 weeks, everyone. Bye-bye.